You know, I follow what is happening in America a lot, and I've seen this gathering number of Democrat candidates, and I've rarely seen a brain cell between them, really. And the one who does speak some sense, Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii, is being castigated by her fellow Democrats because she's against the wars of conquest, etc., and chaos in places like the Middle East. And what we've seen, it's an extraordinary transformation. We've seen the old traditional left, both in this country and in America, the left that was going on protest marches when I was a kid in the 60s, demanding freedom of speech from places like Berkeley, that were against war of acquisition, Vietnam and all those things. We've seen that traditional left usurped by something called progressive. And when I see the progressive mentality, which is now beginning to dominate the Democrat Party in America, I don't see the traditional left that I remember. I see something closer to a fascistic demand that if you don't share the opinions that it has, then you must be silenced. And this is happening all around the world. And because I'm on the kind of coalface of this in what I do, people don't realize how far this censorship and shutting down of people's freedom of opinion has gone.
Do you think it's a bipartisan issue, David? Do you think it's on both sides of the House?
Oh, yes. I've been saying and writing for years and years and years, we live in one-party states. If you look at the period of the Boyd Bush administration, they were following a policy which came out in September 2000 of picking off countries in the Middle East for what they call regime change. And so in the years of Bush and Blair in this country, they invaded Iraq on a lie about weapons of mass destruction. Then we had this transformation whereby Blair was replaced by David Cameron, his quote opponent, or via Gordon Brown. And in America, Obama came in, this new change replaced Bush, and yet the same list of countries that was published in September 2000 continued. So they went into Libya, where they created an absolute catastrophe. They were supporting the so-called civil war in Syria, which has created catastrophe in that country. And another on the list, back in September 2000, was Iran. And now, Mr. Make America Great Again, I'm a maverick, comes in, and he's got rid of the Iran deal, which has kicked all that off, and he's seeking this coup, which is what it is in America, a coup in Venezuela.
Is he as much a maverick as he would like us to believe?
Not in the least, Eamon. This is the con. You see, if you're running basically a one-party state where, as they say in America, those who've kind of sussed it, it doesn't matter who you vote for, the government still gets in, and it's the permanent government that's always there, not the politicians that come and go, then you have to sell in terms of the public, the idea that they have choice. Because if you don't, then, and lots of people are starting to realize this, they'll realize actually they don't have choice. So you bring in someone like Obama, first black president, so that creates an interest. But the same things went on under him as went on under Bush. Then you bring someone else in, oh, this is the maverick, you know, the television host and the billionaire, and that's interesting and all that stuff. And what's happening is we are looking at basically a movie. A smokescreen is another way of describing it, whereby, and especially under Trump, this has been massively done, you focus attention on the personality who is a here today, gone tomorrow level of what we call politics. And because the focus is on them and people think that's where the power is, all the powers with Theresa May, the powers with Donald Trump, people then are so focused on that, they don't see that actually what's really running events is the permanent government.
Okay, well, what do you make of something Trump would make a lot of, hashtag fake news? Do you credit him with exposing that?
Well, again, that is a question that has two edges to its sword. You see, to understand the world and events that appear to be random, we have to understand where the world is being taken. I have this phrase, know the outcome and you'll see the journey. Once you know what the outcome is planned to be, then suddenly you see that random events are not actually random, they're stepping stones to that outcome. And one of the outcomes, which is becoming painfully obvious, but I've been writing about it for nearly 30 years, is to create a situation whereby no one ever sees anything in the public arena in terms of information that the system, the establishment, whatever you want to call it, doesn't want them to see. This is why free speech is being targeted, because while people have freedom of speech, then you can't have a situation where the authorities are controlling everything you see and hear, because free speech has the ability to speak freely and challenge that narrative. So the idea is to target freedom of speech and push in the walls of freedom of expression and freedom of opinion to the point where people only see and hear what the system wants them to see. So on one side with fake news, he's correct in terms of organizations like CNN, which, you know, when I first went to America a long time ago, Eamon, I turned on Fox News and watched it for the first time. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a parody. It was so unbelievably biased. It was.
But it's very good entertainment.
Yeah, but it was so biased. Now, I go to America and I put CNN on for the same reason. It's so extraordinarily biased from the other side, as is MSNBC. So he's right in terms of fake news. I wrote it in my last book, which came out about, I don't know, 2 years ago, just as Trump was coming in, that this whole idea that there was collusion with the Russian government was going to be found to be a nonsense. There is much collusion with Trump. I'm certainly not a fan. But this thing with the Russian collusion was absolutely nonsense. It was made up, and I talk about reasons why it was. And 2 years later, or even more now, with this Mueller report, that's come out. But what has happened in the years between? MSNBC, CNN has been running it day after day after day. So that part of fake news is right. But this is the other sword, or the other side of the sword with fake news. And that is justifying censorship on the internet through Facebook and Google and all these sources. Information that's challenging the official narrative on the basis that it's fake news. So many things that I've written over the years would have been dismissed as fake news, except they've turned out to be true. They've actually happened. And so it's being used. This is the way that freedom of speech is being destroyed. You start with one excuse. Say you might say, oh, we must stop terrorism incitement on the internet. Okay, so you do that. And then you've set the precedent for censorship. You then talk about fake news. So we must stop fake news. So around the governments of the world now, not least in this country, they're saying, how do we stop fake news? What that's really saying is, how do we stop alternative explanations to the official narrative so we can reach this position where people only see what we want them to see? The next thing is hate speech. So who defines hate speech? Well, the authorities do. And this is one of the key things. You create something that you don't define, and then when people say anything that you don't want people to hear, you silence them by saying that comes under quote, hate speech.
Well, we're not going to silence you, because one of the ways, I suppose, to control fake news is to tell your own story. David Icke has brought out a film. It's called Renegade. It is his life story. David, we will pause for a moment. We go to the ad break and we will be back talking about that and what you've done right after this. So you call yourself the Renegade. You've been called worse, haven't you?
Oh, I've been called a lot worse and continue to be so, but by all the right people. Yeah.
What do you mean by all the right people?
Well, if you're challenging an established version of events, then you know you're going to get abuse. You know you're going to get ridicule. You know you've got those things. It comes with the territory. And if people with open minds who'd actually looked at what you're saying, read your books, if they were being very antagonistic towards me, then they're the wrong people, because you think, well, okay, what's all this about?
But what is it all about, David? And for instance, who will go and see this film? I think the really interesting thing about this is the last time you were in, you were talking about filming this, and as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, you were looking for funding on this, and obviously people came forward with the funding which made you make it. So if to anyone who's saying, who would listen to that headbanger David Icke, who is listening to him?
Well, it's the entire spectrum of human society. We had the first premiere last night in Manchester, and it was from very young to very old. It was every background you could think of. And what connects them is an open mind. I was speaking in Sheffield a long time ago now, and I looked through the curtain and looking at the audience, and there was somebody who worked at the theatre standing next to me. And the spectrum of people was incredible. It was like 15, 16 down to 80. It was every colour and creed. And this guy said to me, "What on earth connects all these people?" And I said, "An open mind." And that's
all
it is.
That is my point. You can't dismiss everything that you say and that people aren't interested, because there is that network, there is that following. You are known around the world. People want to hear what you say. And if people think you don't always get it right, it's because, I suppose, it's not what I think or Tanya thinks or they think. It doesn't apply to, well, that's not how we perceive the world. You said something there in the trailer about a chair, which was, what did you say? Was it really there? Had it really got mass?
Well, it's not there. Quantum physics has shown it's not there in the form that we experience it.
Which is?
We experience it. What is it? This is a long story.
Oh, right, okay.
And this movie, Renegade, explains it. And, of course, we've got graphics and stuff like that. So
yes,
it's explained
okay
very simply.
All right,
but this
I
world
that
is not what we think it is.
What I love about you, is that you get the brain cells moving, because no matter what the subject, I can pick any subject out and you will have a theory and you'll make me think and you will provoke me into thinking, is he right or is he wrong or can I see sense in that? And there's so many things. And I want to, first of all, talk to you about in the news today. We've got all this idea that this Chinese communications company, Huawei, are investing in the UK 5G network. America doesn't want them, Canada doesn't want them, New Zealand doesn't want them, Australia doesn't want them, whatever. Yet we have taken them on board amid criticism that it may be just a hotline to the Chinese regime. What's your view?
Well, in many ways, it's a smokescreen from the real point, and the real point is 5G and what it does to the human body and what it does to the human mind. See, going back to the other question, everything in this reality, including the human body, is actually an energetic field of information. And if you think of a computer that's decoding Wi-Fi, if the computer is malfunctioning, if it's skewed in some way, then what appears on the screen is skewed. And we are interacting with these energetic fields. We are these energetic fields, which quantum physics now has well shown exist. And the brain works electrically. It processes information electrically. It communicates with the cells and the cellular structure electrically, and it works on particular frequencies. And therefore, any external technological frequency that disturbs the frequency balance of the body and the frequency balance of the brain is going to have, depending on how extreme it does it, it's going to have anything from mild to catastrophic effects on human health and on the human psychology. And this is why you've got independent scientists, not the ones that are representing the telecommunications industry, but independent scientists who've actually written to people like the World Health Organization and the UN saying, we've got to stop rolling this out until we know the effect this is going to have.
So you're more
on
concerned
humans.
About that effect than the idea that the Chinese regime would be listening in or be able to paralyze our whole communications network within this country?
Well, this is the whole point, is that the communications industry and the surveillance industry, whether it's Chinese technology or whether it's American technology or whatever technology it is, they're all doing it. This is a global movement of controlling what we think, what we see, and keeping us under constant surveillance. I mean, the level of surveillance now is unbelievable. Just you know, we talked last time I was on. When people are having a conversation at home about
your
something,
television
say a product.
Yeah.
Next thing they know, that product is on
their phone.
Their phone on their Facebook feed. The level of surveillance already is fantastic, and it's coming out of Silicon Valley, and it's coming out of China, and wherever it's coming from. So to focus on one area, China, is actually a diversion. It's what's happening globally, of which China will be part, but Silicon Valley is massively a part.
We were talking about a communications network. You've heard of 3G, 4G. We're now on to 5G. David Icke, the alternative thinker on all of these things, was giving his view on that. And just to expand on that, David?
Well, a few weeks ago, there were hearings on Capitol Hill in which representatives of the telecommunications industry were questioned. And there was a Senator Blumenthal, who asked them openly, how much money have you spent funding independent research into the effects of on the body, on health, on psychology of 5G? And they sat there and had to admit, not a single cent. And this 5G is being rolled out so fast, and it's not the same. It's people think, and I understand it, that they think it's just a step on from 4G. It actually operates in another band of frequency called millimeter waves. And because millimeter waves do not travel very far, instead of having like big transmitters transmitting this stuff over a long distance, you're going to have, like they are having already as they introduce it in America, little boxes on the lamppost down the street pumping this stuff out. And the other thing is that this 5G doesn't travel well through solid objects, like urban trees, for instance, are the worst nightmare of 5G. Which kind of interests me with this phenomenon that I'm picking up all around the place, not least in Sheffield, where thousands and thousands of urban mature trees are being cut down. It caused a big, big scandal in Sheffield.
And they say they're being cut down, don't they, because they interfere with the foundations of houses.
Oh, yeah.
You right, interesting.
Well, my brother is a bus mechanic. He goes out, he repairs buses on the side of the road.
Yeah.
So he's constantly traveling all the time, every day. And he said to me independently, there's these big old trees being cut down everywhere. Whether that's connected, I'm open to that. But the fact is, 5G would not like mature urban trees, and they're being cut down. So is that cause and effect? It's something that should be investigated.
David, you know what's so interesting? Because we've gone from talking about 3G, 4G, now 5G. Of course, we've had the, or we're having, the fourth industrial revolution. There's no question about that. And technology is going forward at a pace. We're going into AI. We're going to so many different...
Well, don't start me on AI.
Well, and we're going to so many different areas there now. So how do we stop that? We're already going forward. People are looking at it as a positive. They're saying, well, actually 5G, you know, you're connected more. AI, this can help save lives. So we're already in that movement, aren't we? The fourth industrial revolution is happening.
But if you go back in my books, like 20 years, what is happening now is all described in there, that this is what the plan was. And this is why, you know...
The plan by who?
Well, we talked about that last time I came. There is a network which operates in every country, which is pushing this agenda on. That's why when I travel around the world, I see the same things being introduced, overwhelmingly justified by the same excuses. And this is why this 5G is rolling out all over the place at the same time. The plan is to create what they call a smart grid. This is why almost everything that comes out now is smart, right? Smart this, smart that, smart the other. And it's designed to be one grid. And this whole idea of the Internet of Things shows how fast it's moving. I was warning about the Internet of Things in my books like 10 years ago. We're now there. Mm. And what that is billions, and it's meant to be tens and tens of billions, virtually everything in the end, whether it's your fridge or your car or whatever, is connected to the Internet as part of this whole smart grid. And the end game, which they're already talking about in Silicon Valley, people like Ray Kurzweil, the Google executive, is to connect the human brain to AI so the human brain becomes part of this smart grid. And this is what Kurzweil says, and he gives the kind of period of this really becoming real of 2030. I'm speaking in 2019. He says that once the human brain is connected to AI, AI will do more and more of human thinking and emotional response until, and these are his words, that the human part of it will be basically negligible.
Yeah.
And what is he describing? And he's not alone, far from alone. And the whole movement of this, as you describe, this technological world is moving there real fast because they want to get it real fast. So it's in place before we've sussed what it is. This will mean that the human mind, human consciousness, as we've come to understand it, will basically be assimilated into artificial intelligence. Up to this point, humans have been controlled by controlling their perception, because from perception comes behavior, from perception comes everything, controlling perception by controlling information, because we form our perceptions from information received. So control the information, you form the perception. This end game with AI is to move us from that level of perceptual manipulation to our perceptions coming directly from AI. And it's, like you say, it's moving so fast, which seemed a crazy timescale when he first came out with it, 2030. It starts to put
that
now.
Okay, listeners, what do you think about what you're hearing there? Do you think there's credibility in that? 0344-499-1000. Let me get your views then on Extinction Rebellion. All last week, the protests in London, the way they were handled, what they were carried out, what they're trying to achieve. What do you think?
If they were out there protesting about the effects of 5G, not least the effects on nature of 5G, because these electromagnetic fields are also expressed through trees and the natural world, through animals, it's all the same thing. So they will be affected by this frequency destabilization from 5G, as people have been destabilized already from what we've had so far. Look at the level of child suicide and children thinking of suicide that has emerged in this technological, smart, stroke, social media era. It's going through the roof. Now, that is a cause and effect, because when you are in a sea of technologically generated frequencies, then you are going to be affected by that. And we are seeing the effect. So if they were protesting against 5G, I'd say, well, good on you. But this is something, again, I've been writing about since literally the 1990s. I was saying that this whole global warming, climate change, what I would call a scam, was a hoax from the start through organizations that I name. Because
Let me get this straight. You are a climate change denier.
No, I don't deny climate change. Climate change is always happening. It's always has happened.
So what are you disputing?
I'm challenging the idea that the climate is being catastrophically changed by human activity. First of all, if you look at the graph of greenhouse gases, by far the biggest greenhouse gas, up in the 97-98%, is water vapor and clouds. I mean, what are we going to do? Ban condensation. Then you look at the contribution of carbon dioxide, and it's tiny compared with that. Tiny. And most of that is naturally generated. And then you, as many open-minded scientists have pointed out, it is actually stating the obvious, but sometimes that needs to be done. Without carbon dioxide, we'd all be dead. It's what makes the plants grow. Mm. We're breathing it out. What are you going to do, ban human breathing? It's crazy. Now, so the question comes, and it's understandable. So why are they doing that? Why are they selling us a lie? Because of a technique that I've been talking about for 30 years, which I call problem, reaction, solution. And there's another version of it, no problem, reaction, solution, where you don't have a real problem, but you do sell the perception of one, like global warming, like weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that weren't there. And what you do is you create a problem or the perception of one, and you get the public to believe and therefore react to your problem by basically saying, well, do something, and if not do something, then at least be open to what you want to do to solve the problem. And then so you have the problem, you have the reaction, do something, and then you have the solution, where that which has created the problem or the fake problem then offer the solutions to the problems they've created, giving them, the problem gives them the excuse to do what they want to do, but couldn't justify without the problem.
So who would benefit from the solution, right, in that case?
Okay. Now, one of the things I said at the time when I started introducing this a long time ago was, okay, so what's the solution? Absolutely. The solution, I said, would be to justify the centralization of power, to concentrate a dictatorial system to save the planet. We've got to have control at the center to save the planet. A lot of draconian stroke Marxist structures to make sure we save the world. And what has happened now is that we've had these demands because the world has 12 years left or whatever it is now. It was 12 years, like 20 years ago. Now it's another 12. You just keep having new deadlines. We seem to pass them all right. And what we're having now are these demands for exactly that that structure, that centralization of power.
But wouldn't we be better off with that centralization of power in terms of maybe, you know, however unpalatable it may sound, population control, distribution of wealth, water,
right,
whatever?
Well, two things. I'll come to that in a second, just very quickly. And on the other side of the Atlantic, they've introduced through the Democratic Party and a lady called Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's kind of the progressive poster girl at the moment, something called the Green New Deal. And the Green New Deal is basically what I'm talking about. It's the centralization of power to save the world. Now, once you centralize power, and this is what Marxism does, this is what fascism does, which are basically expressions of the same thing if we really look at them. Once you centralize power, you are creating a very simple situation. You are giving control over the vast majority to a tiny few. And you are hoping that they're benevolent. You're hoping that they will use that power wisely. Mm-hmm. History tells us they never do. Once you have centralization of power, you have abuse of power. And what we've been looking at through human history is the incessant centralization of power. We were in tribes once. Loads of tribes were brought together under nations. Now they're bringing loads of nations mm-hmm. together under the European Union. And now they're talking about wanting a world government, which is what I predicted they would want 30 years ago. And we're in a situation now where globalization is the total expression of what I'm talking about, where the number of people who hold the real center of power in the world, never mind Britain, is tiny.
Okay. Well, I'm taking from that, I may be wrong, that you are in favor of democracy, which leads me to Brexit, leads exactly. me to referendum, and we're going to be talking about that.
We
have got to talk about Brexit. Brexit in 5 minutes. What can you tell me?
Again, I've been on this case now for nearly 30 years. I've done a lot of research into the background of the European Union, where it came from. You can get it back very comfortably into the 1920s. And people like the Habsburg dynasty, it's where the European Union came out of. And I talked before the break about this incessant centralization of power. Well, that's what the European Union is. And there is another technique of manipulation that I call the totalitarian tiptoe, where you're at A, but you know you're going to Z. But you know if you go in too big a leap, then the change will be so great, people will say, what's going on? So you go as fast as you can, but not so fast that you alert too many people of what's happening. And the European Union is a classic. First of all, stepping stone, they sell you a free trade zone, good for jobs. And then they say, okay, well, it will be much more efficient if we centralize decision making. So centralized decision making. Then you go through the Maastricht Treaty, more centralization of power. Then you go through the Lisbon Treaty, which basically has created this European superstate, where what happens in the EU? A handful of unelected bureaucrats
right.
basically dictate the whole of Europe.
So we know all that. And the will of the people in the United Kingdom is to get out of it. Are we going to get out of it?
Well, this is the thing. When the referendum was announced, I was up and waiting for it. I was watching, it was David Dimbleby, wasn't it? Was fronting it up. And they announced the result that actually we were coming. They wanted to come out. I put on the internet, and then within that first hour, this is just the start, because they ain't going quietly. And what we've seen, because the idea of the European Union is to draw more and more countries in, not let any go, especially one like Britain. So what was going to happen, it was always going to be trashed. And once we had a situation where the political class of all parties got involved in deciding what the referendum meant, it was always going to go pear-shaped. And that's what we've seen. It's been an alliance between the political class in Britain and the bureaucrats in Brussels to trash Brexit.
So where are we going? What's your prediction?
At best, well, where we are now is not Brexit, because what the May deal wants is still controlled by Europe, controlled by bureaucrats. That's not what the people voted for. So Brexit is not what it was meant to be anyway already. And the idea is to dilute it and dilute it and dilute it. It's either to dilute it, and they've reached that point already, where it's not Brexit, or to stop it altogether. And you see, you look at the history of the European Union, and whenever countries have had referendums and voted against what the European Union bureaucrats want, instead of accepting it, because this is an agenda, no, we're not being stopped by democracy, this is going to happen, they wait and they have another referendum. It happened in Ireland, and it's happened in other countries.
Until they got the result that they wanted.
Until they get the result that they want. Now, if we have another people's vote and it goes to remain in the European Union, that will be it. They won't be, oh, well, no.
Let's do it again, they'll say.
Maybe the people didn't vote for that, and we must have this another referendum. There won't be none of that. This is all a scam to stop Brexit happening. And in a way, it's a good thing in this sense. It has shown the British people that these cliches that governments and politicians are not there to serve the people are not just cliches. They're actually real, because what's happened is the will of the people has been destroyed, ignored and abused by the political class. And it's a big wake-up call for people. And I know a lot of people have woken up to it now because of Brexit.
Well, you're listening to the voice of the grandmaster of the alternative theory. He is Mr. David Icke. Renegade, his life story is out. Where can you see it? How can you view
it? It's going to be available to download, to watch on June the 4th.
Yes.
And then it will be eventually, you know, these various mediums they have now, maybe Netflix and stuff like that.
Well, David, it has been fascinating listening to you. Listeners, I'm not asking you to agree, disagree, whatever, but open your minds. It's interesting to hear a different narrative on things that are reported in the news. Andy Graham has tweeted me saying, taking into account to the way the world is run today, plus listening to David Icke on talk radio, I would say an open mind is an absolute must, because today, right now, anything is possible. Thank you very much indeed for listening.
Pleasure, Raymond.
Thank you for your company. Good luck with the film.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing it. And with that, we'll say goodbye to David.